Hi. Well, this is the Social Network Coups panel. We're all going to be revolting, or we're going to be the people who are revolted against in this panel. I'm your moderator. I'm Annalee Newitz, and I run a blog called IO9, which is about science fiction. It's only about 2 months old, so we haven't had any user revolts on there yet. So I will be representing a user who has revolted. And also, and we're incredibly lucky to have here a very extremely distinguished panel of other folks. Here is Gina Trapani from lifehacker.com, a blog that you should all be reading right now in order to increase your productivity. And down there all the way on my right is Jessamine West from Metafilter, who's also an incredibly awesome librarian, as well as leading Metafilter to bigger and better things. And we also have Jessica Jewalski right here. You may also know her as Jessica Linden. She works with Linden Labs on community management in Second Life. So I am going to start us off by talking a little bit about what we mean, when we talk about user revolts. And I have one slide. So basically, the point of this panel is partly to bring some definitions into focus here. What do we mean when we talk about a user revolt? How do we handle them? But also, more importantly, to take seriously the idea of user revolts. What happens when people on a social network or who are part of some kind of web service become disgruntled or pissed off with the people who are running that service? And how can they make their voices heard in a way that is effective and also non-destructive, if non-destructiveness is called for? I think probably in some cases destructiveness is called for, but not really on any of the examples we're dealing with today. But also, we want to look at both sides of the coin. We want to talk about, as I said, how users can engage in these revolts successfully, but also how community managers and service managers can respond when their users are pissed off, how the things not to do as well as the things to do. So I want to quickly discuss three kinds of user revolts that I think kind of help define a little bit what we're seeing on a lot of these network services. And I'm going to use as my example some revolts that I've participated in or seen other people participate in on Digg, just because Digg is one of the largest social networks that that most of us are participating in. So it's easy to pick on them. So first of all, I'll tell you about a sort of an anarchist style prank, which I think can be talked about as a user revolt that I actually was involved in on Digg a couple of years ago. I wanted to find out if I could buy votes on Digg and get something really stupid on the front page. And at that time, and I'm sure, is everyone in here, how do I phrase this? How many people here know what Digg is? Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure, you know, that we're all basically understanding what's going on. So a couple of years ago, there was a group called User Submitter. They may actually still be around. And they promised that for, you know, a couple $100, they would pay a group of people to dig your crappy story and get it on the front page of Digg. And so there's a lot of question about whether this was actually possible. And so I decided to find out, and I wrote about it for Wired. So actually Wired paid for my to get this crappy web page I made. So I paid them a couple $100. I made this web page. It's an awesome blog, okay? It's awesome. it's my pictures of crowds. And here's a calm carnival crowd. Here's humans in a crowd in a subway car. You can see that this is a pretty awesome blog already. Sometimes crowds get violent. There's another big crowd. Here's something a little different, a herd. Here's a lot of matching t-shirts in a crowd and a symmetrical crowd. So you can see this is a pretty awesome blog. I think it belongs on the front page of Digg, especially if I pay you a buck to do it, right? So indeed, it got on the front page of Digg. And actually, much to Digg's credit, it was buried after it made it to the front page. People were like, what the fuck? And they did great. But it did make it to the front page, and my traffic spiked incredibly, right? Like, if I had actually been trying to sell pictures of crowds. So the point of that revolt, the group, the anonymous group User Submitter, and I also We're interested in showing how easy it would be to buy votes on Digg, that the way that the site is structured, where you can see what people have voted on, makes it very simple to set up an anti-democratic scheme to buy votes to get things on the front page. It was a small-scale revolt, more of an anarchist prank. Another Digg revolt, which you're probably more familiar with, is the AACS key revolt. And I would call that a genuine grassroots revolt. It's not just some snarky journalist who's trying to get some crap on the front page of Digg. This was many, many thousands of people on Digg wanting to basically engage in freedom of expression. The AACS key is part of the key that unlocks the encryption on HD DVDs, not the format HD DVD, but any HD Blu-ray also. And because of the fact that Hollywood companies were saying, you're going to have to only play these DVDs on an authorized device, which means you can't play it on your Linux box, you can't play it on your other DVD players, people were pissed. So they posted this key to protest this kind of planned obsolescence stuff that Hollywood was pulling. So people started posting the key. Hollywood studios started sending Digg cease and desist letters and asking them to take the key down because they claimed that it violated a clause of the DMCA that would allow that somehow it would allow people to circumvent encryption, which actually it wouldn't have on its own. But let's not talk about that. The point is that eventually so many people posted on Digg. This is an example of one of the posts where they literally just posted the key itself. You can see it got almost 7,000 digs. People posted it in comments. It was so many places that finally the Digg leadership said, okay, fine. If Hollywood sues us, let it happen. Go ahead and post the key. So it was an incredibly successful grassroots revolt in which the leadership of Digg responded, I think, appropriately by saying, all right, the people have spoken. The final, and I'm just going to very quickly go over this, the final type of revolt that I want to talk about that's happened on Digg is what I would call the sort of op-ed style or open letter style revolt, where a small group of people on Digg, people who were submitters, who submit stories, and had achieved a certain amount of popularity because their stories were enjoyed by so many people, discovered last month that the algorithm that's used to choose popular stories for the front page had changed. And so they weren't able to get as many stories on the front page as they had been. It changed the content that was on the front page of Digg. It changed their ability to enjoy being on Digg. And it sort of changed the nature of the community. So they wrote an open letter. There was a lot of controversy over the open letter. It was covered in a lot of news outlets. They basically said, and here's the open letter up here on screen. It's if you want to find it, it's on the Drill Down, which is a podcast that's run by a couple of submitters on Digg. It was, as I said, it was covered in a lot of news outlets, and they basically said, if you don't meet our demands for fixing this crappy algorithm, we're leaving. We're not going to participate in Digg anymore. Which ultimately they decided that they wouldn't leave. But it received so much attention and people were so pissed for a variety of reasons that, it caused Digg to inaugurate its practice of having town hall meetings. And so the recent town hall meeting that was on Digg where users could come and ask questions of, two of Digg's founders is in some ways a result of this particular revolt. So I compare this kind of revolt to maybe, as I said, printing an op-ed in a newspaper. So it's high-profile people claiming to speak for a larger community in a large public forum. And in this case, it was somewhat successful. Now they have their town hall meetings. The algorithm hasn't changed. All the problems are still there. But it did have a certain amount of effectiveness. So those are my three types of revolt, the kind of anarchist prank, the grassroots rebellion, and the kind of op-ed, taking a public stance on issues in a particular social network. So now I'm going to hand this over to Jessica, and she is going to talk about some revolts that have occurred in Second Life.
Just really quick, everyone knows what Second Life is? Yes? No? Oh, sorry. Closer. There. I'm too tall for this microphone. There we go. So raise your hand if you have either been in the world inside of Second Life or you kind of have a general understanding of what it is. Okay, cool. So I don't have to describe what it is before launching directly into user revolts. So Second Life is kind of built for user revolts, right? It's an organizing platform where people can get together and communicate. We've had all of the kinds of revolts that you just mentioned, the sort of individual anarchist prank. We call them griefers. They don't all have noble causes, but some of them might. Some of them do. The grassroots, which is what I'd like to talk a little bit about. We've had some very sort of interesting cases of this. It started, I think it's a month after Beta. The way that Linden tried to make money initially was by taxing individual prims. So they, people who are more creative would be charged more, which did not go over well with the more creative people in the community. And they actually staged a tax revolt. If you look here in the on the screen, there's a picture. It was in the sim called Americana. So it took a very American theme, and they had they threw crates of tea. they basically closed down the region by filling it with tea boxes. And it actually, you know, it led to the people who are working at Linden at the time. I wasn't there yet. I didn't join for another year. We started talking with the community and said, okay, well, then we need to figure a different way to make money. Which led also to, which led to renting sims in the form of virtual land, and also led to, more interestingly, IP rights for content that you create within Second Life, which, you know, might have occurred to us before then, but really hit home that people care about what they're creating. They're willing to fight for it, and they don't want to be taxed on a per prim basis, for it. Oh, cool. Thank you. Something that is probably, well, a little more well known is something that happened in 2006. Second Life, so there was a group of open source developers working, on a thing called libsl. And, someone created a program, because one of the things you can't do in Second Life right now is export your work. It lives on our servers. So someone created a way to export, anything from within Second Life, and then posted that code on their site. And immediately someone downloaded it, edited it, and put it back up as a way to take full copies and replicate objects, avatars, everything. Since identity is life within virtual worlds, this caused a bit of an outrage especially amongst content creators. So there were protests, there were conversations with Linden Lab. What are we going to do to fix this? What can we do? The DMCA, you know, covers this, but it's tricky to navigate. It's hard to do. It doesn't stop, what's happening. And it led to a lot of protests and outcry. And, what I thought was a really interesting grassroots thing where people closed their stores for a day. A lot of the popular content creators just closed down for a day of silence, in protest, which was very effective in that it, you know, brought a lot of awareness to the issue to people who might not have been aware or even care about IP rights in a virtual space. And then Linden Lab as a company met with a lot of the residents who are involved in this, the content creators, the people who are very upset. And it led to a policy on our behalf that basically says, you know, you can't use this. The copybot is not allowed. It's against the terms of service, and started, a couple of different paths for production that we made different things for that. I think what was interesting about that is it also led to greater transparency, from the company to the community, because people were demanding to know how changes impacted, the economy. Second Life has a large internal economy. So the more data you give to people, the more transparent you are, the more they want, which lends to an interesting thing. The thing that I think about user revolts is that you want to engage. Well, not always. You usually want to engage. Sometimes you want to wait and then engage. Sometimes engaging right away is exactly what people want, and it's maybe not the most useful thing to do. But yeah, the more data we give people, the more that they want. And really quick, the last thing here is this just came out this week. The IP fight continues. These are ads made to raise awareness about IP theft, basically is what they're calling it, content theft. These are famous content designers in Second Life all posing nude, to raise awareness about AP rights in world and help get the word out that people are still, you know, if you're recreating content and copying someone's design, it's not the same. It's much in the real world when people want the real Prada bag and not the faux Prada bag. It also stresses the sort of avatar centric, community of Second Life. The avatar is the most important thing. So if you're taking our avatar, you're taking our identity.
Is it a prank since they're naked, or like?
It could be a combination. It's grassroots plus op-ed.
Naked, plus yeah. Nudity. Oh, I should say there's going to be more nudity. Are you ready for more nudity?
That guy in the back. He's
there's
ready
like
for
one
more
dude
nudity.
Is like, yeah. It's all virtual nudity though. I'm sorry about that.
Super. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm Jessamine. I'm 33% of the admin team of Metafilter. Let's do the hand thing. When I say Metafilter, do people in this room... Oh, thank God. It's this big blue website, and it's a big community blog, and anybody who's a member can post something to the front page, and unlike the sort of vote up, vote down, or the buying or whatever of content, basically, as soon as you register, which used to be free and now costs $5, you can put something right on the front page. So we have this kind of hippie trust thing going on, where we really hope that you're going to sort of add value to the community by being excellent and not necessarily by screwing around. So I'm a participant, but really I'm the sort of person that clicks the you're screwing around button. Anybody who wants to follow along, I'm going to be really sort of summarizing a big thing that happened from like May through now on Metafilter. The slide. Is it librarian.net/talk/SXSW if anybody wants to sort of click through this stuff. But in short, Metafilter is a kind of a massive group blog. We've got 35,000 users. It says like 70-something on the front page, but those are like people who ever clicked the sign-up thing. We've got 35,000 users. Out of those 35,000 users, we have 21,000 people who have contributed to the site. They've made a post. They've made a comment. They said, me too. Or whatever it is. Out of those, and keep in mind, like, we don't have demographic surveys. We don't ask for any information from you. We have a lot of users that are completely anonymous. But every now and again, we try and figure out who's on the website. And so some of these, the real demographics are numbers, like how many people clicked a button, that we know. But then, like, Federated Media is our, they sometimes advertise on Metafilter, and we did kind of a cheat demographic thing for them at some point, like, can people please click these buttons so that Federated Media can tell people, oh, we're all engineers, or whatever it is. But one of the things that we found, no surprise to anybody, right, is that Metafilter is about 67% male, surprised, and about 78% 18 to 39 years old. And our moderation team is 75% male and 100% 18 to 39. Surprise, surprise, right? So what wound up really happening, so the tools that we have at our disposal, right? If you're a user and you don't like what's going on Metafilter, what can you do? Well, we've got a flagging system, kind of like Craigslist. There's a little drop down and you say, somebody broke the rules, and the sort of associated nanny maybe-ing that is. Or you can email one of us, say, somebody broke the rules, and I get out of bed in the morning and say, oh, gosh. Or you can griefers. We have a lot of people who use the site against itself, which I'll be talking very quickly about. Or just, yeah, general acting out. And as moderators, the tools that we have are, well, we can edit your post, which we never do because everybody loses their mind. We can delete your post, which we never do very often in most of the site because everybody loses their mind. We can ask nicely, which doesn't work at all, usually. Could you stop calling each other names, please? Like, that's my job. I wake up every morning and I tell boys on the internet to stop calling each other names. We have the ban hammer. How many people here are members of Metafilter? Okay. We have the ban hammer where we just basically say, I'm sorry, you're done. And we have about 700 users that are banned at this point, which isn't actually that many. We can change the rules, which only sort of works. And then we can use something more subtle, which was sort of what happened here in the sexism thing. And if you want to click through and read our guidelines or whatever. So I have a brief timeline of events. First thing that happened, Metafilter became pseudo-social, where users could put up photographs of themselves, hopefully, God. One of my jobs is looking at the user photographs. But they could put up photographs of themselves, and Matt, who owns the site and kind of runs it and is my boss, Matt basically thinks this was the end of everything, because once we realized that we're all a bunch of mostly white, mostly 17, 18 to 39, you know, techie, nerdy, square glasses people, all of a sudden we started being aware of ourselves, and it made everybody very uncomfortable. So, and there's a Metafilter mail, private messaging system for Metafilter people. So what happens? Somebody posts kind of a, let's see if I can, if I want to open this in a new tab here. This one. Oh, not that one.
Oh, you wanted to open that. Sorry.
That's okay. Just go to that. Sorry. This one? Mm-hmm. And then what? I have this machine. So somebody posted a link to like a sort of silly Craigslist thread on exhibitionism, right? And it was summarily pulled fairly quickly because it was just kind of a cheapy Craigslist thread on exhibitionism. But
sorry, slow network connection.
It's not. But what wound up happening in the meantime was, you know, one of the women on the site was like, you know, just based on law of averages, I'm sure we have exhibitionists and public masturbators on Metafilter, don't you think? Which I thought was hilarious. But other people didn't. And so they started a meta talk thread where you started talking about the site itself. And of course, they started this thread with the title Hysterical. Now, any of you fellas in here know like the best way to like piss off your female friends when they're angry about something is to indicate that perhaps there's some sort of hormonal problem they're having that that causes them to do these things that they do. So that started everything off on the wrong foot, and it started basically, let's just go back. You guys can click through this yourself if you want to. So it basically started a 570 comment meta talk thread about girl issues and who is this jerk anyhow, and I don't like that she said this. Like, and the guy basically said, I can tolerate sexism, but this has gone too far. You hysterical, 33% of women on Metafilter. So then what wound up happening is somebody posted kind of a stunt post about exhibitionists and how they feel about their work. And then Jenny Diskey, does anybody know Jenny Diskey? She writes for London Review of Books. And yeah, she posted a follow-up thread about, well, let's talk about how women feel about exhibitionism. But it was a double post because we were already talking about exhibitionism. So we removed that. And then that started everything. Basically, there was a MetaTalk thread posted about why did you remove the women's view of exhibitionism and not the men's view of exhibitionism. That thread went 1,100 comments. And through this, one of the feminist men on Metafilter, that's not going to show up in the podcast as like give serious look, but really, basically decided that the sexism issue on Metafilter, and granted, there is a lot of like casual, I'd hit it, rape jokes, any topic of female, anything, somebody wants to talk about how much they would or would not like to have sex with this woman, because of course we all really give a shit about that, right? Anybody who's Twittering this, please, you know. But so basically what wound up happening was this man decided, and this was going on in late November, which if you'll realize, that's Thanksgiving time. And this man basically decided to issue a manifesto, a shot over the bow, as it were, which he sent to all 50 women who had commented in that thread besides me, basically saying, the time is now. And then a whole bunch of people talked about it. And the most important thing from my perspective, from the moderator perspective, was that it was Thanksgiving and it was my dad's birthday and I'm on the East Coast. So actually everybody else who worked on the site was eating. And the most important thing that I did at that point was nothing. Because a whole bunch of other women decided that maybe having the feminist man on Metafilter telling them how to interact with the sexism issue. But long story short, and we can talk about this a little bit more afterwards, all the, you know, dude moderators were like, oh, Jessamyn, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know. I'm eating. Basically, we changed our tag that says offensive to change to say offensive. Well, Matt wrote it, sexism, racism. It should say offensive, sexist, racist. I know. Issue, tell people again, you know, the casual rape stuff is really not funny. And then back that up, we had a second sexism thread that went on for 7 days. And then the first time somebody was talking about some excellent gamer team project and somebody said, bonus, the girl on the team is really cute. Then we talked about that for 600 more comments. But one of the things on Metafilter, and I'll leave this to discussion later, is that really for us, like the talking cure, we really think we're community policing. And so we changed a little flag to say that's not okay. We talked to people basically for a month and a half until worse things happened that made everybody forget about it. And then every time it comes up, we sort of talk about it again and we reassert how we feel, where we includes me, but it also includes everybody else on the site, and sort of deal with these things as they come up, because we don't have sort of top down, even though technically we have root, we don't have top down authority to do much. And so the sexism issue, if you want to sort of click through and read about it, is very interesting because it's sort of endemic to the internet in general, I think. Oh, and there's all the other things that piss people off on MetaTalk for, you know, Metafilter hobbyists. Those are the top. Oh, my favorite comment? Can we briefly look at my favorite comment?
Yeah.
I'll put it up while we're. It was by, I believe, a user called Super Crayon. Basically was like satirizing the whole thing. To call out sexism, you can use the flag, call it out in the thread, call it a meta talk, except the flag is irrelevant and useless and unfair, and using it will turn Metafilter into a barren PC wasteland. Calling it out in thread is a derail, and by the way, is exactly why feminists are often thought of as humorless, man-hating, uptight bitches. And by talking about sexism, you're turning Metafilter into a barren PC wasteland. And everybody is tired about threads in this subject. You're overreacting. I don't think it's sexist, so it isn't. And you're turning Metafilter into a barren PC wasteland, so you should shut up. Except, why don't you ever speak up and say anything if it bothers you so much? I'm tired of you being tired about it. Grow some balls. Also, you're ugly. Thank you.
All right, let's finish up with Gina's tale, which also involves asses.
Hi, everyone.
Totally an accident.
No, it's just all about butts on the internet.
Yeah, we got to the green room and we were like, it's all about ass.
It is all about ass.
There's full frontal hand drawings in the Craigslist post, too.
Sorry, we missed that.
I'm Gina, and I'm an editor of lifehacker.com, which is not primarily a community site the way that Metafilter or Dig or Second Life is. It's a blog. It's a daily blog. So the threads that happen on it are comment threads. Even though you can register for a comment account, you can have profiles, you can have discussions. The discussions are editorially driven, right, by the posts that we put up. So, you know, we get lots of complaints at Lifehacker. We write too many posts. Our design sucks. Our comment system doesn't work. And occasionally we get, you know, a couple of complaints about ads. But there was one particular advertisement that ran in July of 2007, which for a product called the Toto Washlet, which is basically a toilet seat. A fancy toilet seat that's also sort of a bidet. And their ad campaign, this is actually a screenshot from their site, from the front page of their site. Their ad campaign involved, butts, as you can see, smiling butts. And, so the Toto people bought, an ad campaign at Lifehacker and several other Gawker sites, like Gizmodo and Consumerist and a couple other sites. And so on Lifehacker, which is a blog about, getting more stuff done, there was a leaderboard of the Toto butts and a tower ad. So there are a lot of butts for a couple of days there. And as soon as they showed up on the site, we just got this torrent of email, right? So like users can't post their own threads on Lifehacker because it's a blog, so it's editorial driven. So we get this torrent of email, about the ads. And, for many reasons, but let me read you a couple of my favorite comments from that we got via email. This one was my favorite, I think. I visit Lifehacker almost every day. This is from a woman. I love its helpful articles, so at first I'd like to say thanks. However, I have a complaint. I was mooned today when I visited the site. There on the left sidebar was an ad displaying three completely naked behinds. I happen to be viewing Lifehacker from home where my child can easily see my computer screen, and that offends me. Okay, all right, so... Okay, another one that we got. Your washlet ad has gotten me a strike at my workplace. The IT guy sent me a memo. This ad is borderline. Is there any chance you can go back to an older advertiser that doesn't show exposed parts? okay. Now we're starting to get, my editors and I are starting to get a little concerned, right? People are like, they're blocking the site at work, which is supposed to be about getting work done. And that's a little bit of an issue. Couple more. What's up with the washlet ads with bare asses on lifehacker.com? I really like your site and often peruse at work, but that ad's borderline, those ads are borderline not safe for work. The last thing I need is to be hassled over something like that. So, okay, fine. I mean, Lifehacker is one of several sites that include a pornography site, several, tabloids. I mean, we're probably the one of the few sites, and IO9, that are kind of like happy and servicey, and we want to help you, you know? So we didn't feel good about mooning our readers, all day long.
We do at my site, though.
I mean,
we removed the image tag completely.
Sort of being a part of Gawker, we deal with edgy content every day. So my editors and I and the sales department and my managing editor started this conversation. Like, do we do something about this ad? Do we tell our readers to suck it up? So now what's happening, actually, we're posting through this, right? And the conversation, because users can't post their own threads, the threads attached to all the posts that we've done that day and the next day get totally derailed and people start discussing the asses, right? And people start swapping tips, like, oh, you should, you don't like the asses, like install ad block and go to the options tab and then click here. And so they're now like swapping tips about how to block the ad, which warmed my heart, really, honestly, I have to say. I mean, even though my paycheck is sort of tied to this type of thing. Anyway, long story short, this is a kind of really straight up kind of story. I went to sales and I went to my managing editor and was just like, look, readers are saying that this ad contradicts sort of the philosophy of the website, that we're trying to help people get things done and sort of by nature of the site supposed to be safe for work. And these, arguably maybe or not by, whatever definition. So can we take them down? And several other of the Gawker sites had also gotten complaints. But Lifehacker was the only site that the ad did get pulled. We decided to pull it from Lifehacker, but we left it on the other sites. So it was actually a very successful user revolt. So that's kind of my story. And it's interesting. Lifehacker's demographic is mostly men. I think it's 70-30 men and women. So, it's interesting. It brings up a lot of questions about when do you do what your users are asking? Is this just a vocal minority, or does everyone feel this way? At what point do you draw a line and say, this isn't working? Like, at what point do you examine your process and say, should the editors have seen this ad before? Because Adam, my co-editor, said to me, as soon as I saw that ad, I knew I was waiting. I braced myself for the emails about it, and I was kind of feeling the same way. And it's like, do we need to put in a process? Was this a failure on our part about, whether or not the ad should have run to begin with? So that's my story.
So when did you decide, like, how many mails did it take before you said, okay, it's not just a vocal minority, it's like clearly mass sentiment?
It certainly wasn't an over 1,000 comment Metafilter thread. We got about 24 or maybe 36 emails and several comments, which I wasn't able to easily count because it was across so many different posts. But that's a lot of emails about a single issue. We get lots of like one-off or two-off complaints, but that's a lot of mail about one particular issue. For someone to take the initiative to write us an email, especially the lengthy ones that received about this, we started to think it was kind of a mass thing.
Okay, so we're gonna have a little bit of a conversation, and then we're gonna invite you guys to ask questions or make comments as well. I just wanted to ask you guys, and then you also, what do you think, Jessica? What do you think was the most effective user revolt that you've dealt with, like, and what made it effective? And and when I say effective, I mean actually changing the thing that the revolutionaries wanted changed.
Sure. It's tricky because usually the revolts happen about things that are issues. So IP rights, we haven't really solved that. Linden Lab couldn't solve it either. Sorry. Turns out that's hard. So we have given them better tools. I'm too tall for all these microphones. Sorry. We've given better tools after the copybot. And I think the thing that's most interesting to me as far as successful goes, the people who were behind a lot of the revolts are now organizing themselves, which to me, that is way more successful than Linden Lab saying, okay, there shall be no more IP violations ever. Like, whatever, that's never going to happen. So the fact that they're organizing and really kind of pulling themselves together is way more interesting to me than anything that we could do as a service for them.
So it's effective because it's helped them create a community.
Basically. I think so, yeah.
So Jessamine, what do you think was the most... I mean, do you think that this revolt over sexism was effective?
Personally, for like the future world that I want to see at Metafilter, it worked for me. And it's weird because like I help run the place. So I don't kind of get to chime in and be like, yeah, if it were up to me, all y'all would, you know, like I have enemies on Metafilter, you know, I'm sorry. But like, you know, I don't get to choose. So I have to be kind of a facilitator. And I really feel like just being like, look, the I'd Hit It stuff is tired. It's tired. You're tired. You're obnoxious. You're bothering everybody. Like, women hate you. Like, I really feel like being able to say that in a big forum and be like, and now it's the rule. Like, there's a sort of side joke that we found that one of our users didn't know that the word cooter was a slang term for. So I basically have promised that I will change my username from Jessamine to Cooter if we go a month on Metafilter where somebody doesn't say I'd Hit It. That's been in place since November. And I'm not worried. So I feel like it helped a little bit. We had a couple high profile women that quit, and that sucked. We had a couple high profile women who maybe weren't going to be happy with any site that had men on it who used foul language. Seriously. And
the internet's pretty much out then.
Well, and that's really the thing. So I feel like it corrected in a direction that makes me happy. I feel like it didn't go far enough for some people. I feel like the particularly heinous Mr. Hysterical MetaTalk thread is gone because we're like, one more thing. And then he made some like crazy blowjob post to the front page. We're like, you're gone. Awesome. So it helped me with some personal problems I've been having in my life. But I do think it was effective. And we also had an ad thing like you guys had on Lifehacker where we took a suicide girl ad, which is like underwear ladies. But for a site that doesn't have any ads, having underwear ladies on the front page, and Matt thought it was okay. And honestly, I thought it was okay. Who cares? But there were enough women who were made uncomfortable and been like, it just now feels like it's not my place. That, you know, we had a big MetaTalk thread and talked about it and decided not to have, you know, Matt's like, is it worth $150? I mean, because it came down to that. And then maybe no. So I find it was effective. But it's really hard to figure out, is this just three pissed off people? Because Mr. Manifesto Man quit the site and he's not happy. So it didn't work for him. And maybe the other people who could have gotten behind that. So it's unclear.
So we know that your user role that you talked about was effective. So maybe you could just, Gina, sort of tell us if you were to have another user revolt over, I don't know what it would be, what would be, as someone who's running the blog, what would be your preferred mode of people contacting you? Like, do you want them to say things in comments? Do you want them to send you letters?
Well, wait, one other revolt that we had was a major redesign that we did. I think it was like 2 years ago. And we did a post like where we've redesigned the site. What do you think? And it was a long thread for that point in time. It was like 200 comments and people hated the design, hated it. And you know, that was fine. Like, I was really happy to have that conversation. Well, I lie, actually. I wanted to cry for 2 days, but I was glad that at least there was this one place where everyone was having this discussion. And it was really good because my bosses could see the comments that were getting made. The design was not going to get rolled back, which is what all users were calling for. But we did make some tweaks based on their suggestions, and people were writing grease monkey scripts to roll the design back to the original, which I was like, right on. Like, I'll post
welcome
your script.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, my world too.
Well, I mean, I just love that sort of user empowerment. I mean, to me, I was like, that's awesome. I'll post your script if you really want the site to look the way it used to look. So yeah, that was definitely my preferred. I'm jealous. I mean, the MetaTalk thing, like, I would love to have something like that. Like, I'd love to have a Meta Life Hacker. We could talk about the site. What do you want? But it's so meta.
Somebody should do the rollback version of Dig too, like original algorithm and
the original algorithm. Yeah, that would be great. Like, yeah. A grease monkey script to do that, to roll back the Dig algorithm, yeah, would make me really happy as well.
We'll see if that'll satisfy the.
Well, like, we have an offsite wiki. I'd be surprised if you couldn't get people to do like an offsite Meta Life Hacker.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. No, it's true. I probably could set something up offsite, but then that would just be like PB a whole another system I had to manage. You know,
well, no,
like,
so
I would,
you like, don't have to manage it at all. That's great.
Let them talk about it.
It's
right,
user generated right. content. I hear it's all the rage.
Hey, it works for us.
So if folks want to ask questions or talk about user revolts that they have been involved with, the mic is over there.
Or you can just like yell and hold up a sign from your seat if you want to protest. Is it on?
It will be. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I've been lucky enough to witness both the dig revolt over the key. And I also have seen Metafilter stumble along through all this fun. And taking off my position hat on any of that stuff, the thing that struck me was in Metafilter, two or three people quit over some of the stuff. And that was huge to the community. And there was all this angst and navel-gazing over two people quitting. Yet Dig and Slashdot and a lot of these other community sites, people like, I'm never coming back forever. And everyone's like, good riddance, goodbye. So the issue of people leaving Second Life, Metafilter, Dig, Lifehacker, your thoughts on how much is too much?
I mean, it depends on, I hate to say this, it sounds awful. It depends on the person. So if all of the content creators of Second Life quit, that would be more noticeable than if, you know, 20 or 50 or 100 or 5,000 people who were just consumers quit. I mean, the content creators would feel it would depend on who it was, I think.
And I think that was what was interesting about the most recent Dig revolt, as it were, over the new algorithm, was because it was exactly that kind of situation where it was some of the more prominent submitters, who are content creators, basically, got together and wrote this letter and threatened to quit. Although it's true that not all of them actually wanted to quit, and I think there was a lot of angst over that. But yeah, I think if it's if it's prominent community members who are standing up and saying, you know, no, I'm not just going to like take my click away, but I'm going to take my content away, then yeah, I think it does matter. So I think it has to be a combination of users and whatever the equivalent of submitters is, creators or
consumers, whatever. Yeah.
Well, and that was the manifesto, was all about like, well, if I just leave, the feminist dude, that's not going to have, I mean, he was basically asserting that what needed to happen was 10 to 12 high profile women from Metafilter needed to leave in protest in order to facilitate some sort of, change that, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know how it would work, right? Because we'd have to make new guidelines and we'd have to, but that was what he was saying. He's like, I can't do it alone. And, you know, I love that kind of shit in my real life, you know, like we're all going to lock arms and, you know, stop the highway from going through the farm. But like, it's different in the sort of virtual world. And it has been interesting watching different people leave and the community's reaction. Like, is there an acronym for like, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out? Because I mean, some of those people were just like, and then other people, especially like the high profile women, even if we felt like they were over the edge, I really wish we could have. But one of the things about Metafilter is that it's created by the people who are still there, not the people who left. And so as soon as you leave, you lose your weird vote, except in the email that you send me all the time complaining about, you know, how you liked the site before.
Right. And the great thing is people come back. I mean, in Second Life, I've been with Win Linden for 4 years, and people come back. They say, I'm never going to do this again. You guys suck. You broke it. You ruined Second Life. I'm leaving. And they come back. Not always. Sometimes they do leave and they do something else. And that there is that sense of loss that you feel as a community manager, but sometimes they come back. So it's not always, it's not a forever thing.
The Manifesto Man did secretly come back, Metafilter people, by the way.
See, it's always secret.
Inside scoop.
So I want to ask a question. You were talking mostly about dealing with user revolt as managers of these communities. My job largely is trying to instigate user revolts designed to disrupt and at many points disable.
Yes. Are you a marketer?
No. I'm an anti-marketer. I work for an organization that does a lot of locking arms to stop highways, and so we're figuring out how to do that online.
Okay.
And so I'm interested in your take on, as users, what do you, from a user's perspective or from an organizer's perspective, ideas about how to be most effective in terms of generating user revolts that ultimately disable online communities.
No.
Not with any of your side.
Wait, no, I'd like to ask, no, because I think this is a really interesting question, probably not for the reasons that you guys think, but but I think that there, because if you're talking about the kinds of protests that people have done in the real world, sometimes the goal is shut this down,
yeah.
Right? It's sometimes a destructive goal, and I don't think any of the sites we've been talking about up here today need to be shut down in that way. And so we haven't really gone there. But it is a good question. And I think, you know,
it really is going to depend on what you're trying to shut down and how did you want to do it in a way that's going to be constructive too. Like, you don't want to destroy people's lives by shutting down a site where, you know, two people will be harmed that actually suck, but then 1,000 people who don't suck will also be harmed, right? So, like, you don't want to shut down Dig over the AACS key because that's dumb. So the answer, unfortunately, really is it depends on what you're trying to do and how you're trying to shut the community down. Are you trying to shut down a community like Metafilter that's an actual community where people are chatting? Or are you just trying to shut down, you know, the U.S. forestry?
Where?
GM Next, so trying to shut GM Next down. Is that a community or is that just a site? Right, so you want to sort of call attention to the fact that it's a fake community or something like that.
And that's General Motors, genetically modified food, what? Okay.
Yeah, I'm like pro GMOs, so let's not shut down GMOs. Not GM so much. So I think that's part of it. I mean, in some ways, you're just talking about old-fashioned hacktivism, like shut down the site.
I was going to say, what's wrong with denial of service attacks? If all you want to do is keep people from clicking on the website, go hack their DNS and, like, leave me alone. Like, I mean...
But denial of service, also defacing the site.
Zombie bots, I hear, are very effective.
I mean, if your goal is to just, you know, be destructive, then that is definitely the way to go.
If you want
to
raise
awareness, if you want to like advocate and raise awareness, then yeah, these are all. I mean,
then
all
you deface
of these are mediums for that.
Okay, Gina, what do you... People. I want to know what Gina thinks, because I think Gina is probably the least likely to want to deface anything of all of us.
I'm a little freaked out. I'm a little freaked out by the suggestions that are getting bandied about right now. Yeah, that's all.
Do you want to say something moderating about this? Like, what would be a way that wouldn't involve defacing or DDoS?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example. I'm like, give me an example. Like, where, like, what, like, GM Next being, because it's fake, like. Yeah.
Like, political stuff, or because you just
Next
like to cause trouble?
GM Next sucks.com?
Okay.
Sure. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just would set up a site and call it out. Call bullshit on it. Call it out for what it is. Didn't that happen with like the, wasn't there like a singing cow or something several years ago that was supposed to be like a real blog and wasn't? Everyone just made fun of it. Like all the real bloggers made fun of it and they just shamed the hell out of it and it just died.
There
was
a great panel this morning about bad social advertising campaigns and that was one of the things.
And the thing you have to remember is the media loves this kind of stuff because they don't understand it at all. And so, like, when we had AstroTurfers, when we had AstroTurfers on Metafilter and called them out and it became this high profile thing, like, that wound up in the New York freaking Times.
Right. That's
and that was
stuff,
embarrassing right. For the charity in question. And so I think, like, papers of record and media of record can actually do more damage. But what you need to do is explain in very small, this is what the internet is. I have a friend on the internet who, but like, leveraging that to the media is actually the thing that I've found is the most effective and using legitimate sites to do that. Sorry, you guys.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm embarking on launching a site that is media sharing where people can upload links to the YouTube content, any site that they want pretty much. But it is moderated. I am not going to allow anything to go on there. I specifically do not want porn only because I can't compete with YouPorn. And that's
XTube.
Right. So my question is I want to make the site exciting and titillating and applicable to a young audience, but I don't want pornography on there and I will yank it off before it ever gets on the front page. Any advice? Where do you draw the line? How do you keep site exciting and don't have the "hey, I'd hit that" kind of metaphors going on?
"I'd hit that" is exciting compared to pornography. I mean, like, got text.
Yeah, you need to have that explicitly in your terms of service. And I mean, you can always have the "not safe for work" rule. I think that that's something that people really understand. Say, don't post anything that's not safe for work. We want people to be able to look at this at work or at school, and don't post anything that you wouldn't be comfortable having your colleagues see over your shoulder if you work at a regular place.
As long as you don't work at Linden Lab.
Yeah, as long as you don't work at all the places I've ever worked.
Thanks a lot.
I was wondering if we could get your take on the group called Anonymous and their use of sites like Dig and YouTube and other social networks to attack Scientology.
Are they watching us? I don't know.
Yay.
We had Tom Cruise's lawyers after us once. And we're a little a post about Scientology has to be a good post about Scientology. But one of the things that we've really found is that there's a whole bunch, the thing that keeps Scientology off of Metafilter isn't the Scientology and the Anonymous group and all that stuff. It's zealots who can't talk about anything else. It's the same thing that keeps Ron Paul off of Metafilter. You know, the blimp is hilarious, really, but don't you have anything else to say about it? And so we've had posts about the Anonymous group and the Scientology stuff and people talking about it. And we don't, beyond that, stay on top of content. I think the whole thing's kind of fascinating because if it's legitimate enough seeming, it stays more.
And it's not destructive, right? It's just spreading information. It's spreading a perspective on information, shall we say. And I don't see, they're not trying to flood sites. They're just trying to create a meme.
Well, and they do a little bit, but keeping it in line and having it be appropriate to whatever the site that they're on.
Yeah, as long as it's not flooding, as long as it's not we're going to post 40 bajillion things, so everything will only be Anonymous attacking Scientology.
Do you know Teresa Nielsen Hayden? Are you familiar with her? Yeah. So she's now moderating the comments on Boing Boing. She runs a wonderful website of her own called Making Light that has the most amazing conversations in the comments that you've ever seen. I would say go in there now, but if you do, you'll miss the rest of the conference because you'll be just reading posts for 16 hours. What she says is that the goal is to create a community that has a set of values that will then reinforce them for the rest of you. So which I think all of you seem to be doing, my sense is that the attacks are when somebody sets the community against itself. And there was the attacking the breastfeeding pictures on LiveJournal. Do you remember that case? Where somebody was upset about not being able to post naked women pictures. So he reported all the pictures of women who were breastfeeding as pornographic just to set the community against itself and cause a gigantic fight. So the question is, how do you damp down those inter-community fights and riots?
I'd say the community, so speaking from working at Second Life, the community takes care of that a lot. I don't know if it's a community managing kind of position, but the community usually doesn't stand for that kind of thing internally. I don't know.
We have people that flag every post with a swear in it. and occasionally you actually have to talk to those people, and it's hard because you have to talk to those people and be like, just by the way, you're continuing to flag every post with a swear in it, and we're going to continue to ignore it because that's the way the thing goes. But they can bring it to MetaTalk, and instead of having me politely tell them that's not going to fly, they can have a lot of rude people tell them that's not going to fly. And so we have multiple levels of reinforcement of whatever our community values are, the guidelines and the wiki and me talking to you. The other thing for us, and I don't know if this is true for you, we're all very on message. It sounds really weird to say, but all the moderators at Metafilter really agree on what Metafilter's about. And so even though the sexism stuff was kind of weird, we all decided how we felt about it in order to move forward on it. And that's about the only way you can keep 30,000 people. You know, we don't have the if mom says no, ask dad thing going on because you have a really hard time with that.
Yeah, I mean, the self-policing thing is absolutely true for us. We get emails from people that are like, hey, check out this commenter. We also have flagging ability. The other thing I think is that, the community sets a tone for itself. It's interesting. Lifehackers commenters are incredibly nice to one another. And mostly because the tone, you know, the editorial tone of Life Hacker is nice. I mean, Gawker.com is really mean about everyone, you know, sniping, you know, the posts are. So all the commenters in turn, you know, mimic the editors and snipe at one another. And it becomes this thing of like, who can be meaner and snarkier, right? It's like Flickr. You go to Flickr and people comment on one another's photos. Sometimes they're mean, but mostly it's like, wow, this is beautiful. You know, Dig, it's like, who can be like, you know, like stupider and funnier, you know, stupid funny. And the, you know, the comments are all like, yeah, duh, you know, like Barry, stupid, just already, you know.
YouTube comments, you know. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of the question. Once you've got, a solid practice, I can see how you reinforce it. How would you fix YouTube comments?
Keep voting them down.
Napalm
all of them.
Comes to mind.
Napalm.
I mean, YouTube doesn't, I mean, that's the thing. They don't have, they've got the thumbs up, thumbs down, right? I think that's it. For moderation. I mean, I think YouTube goes up there with MySpace that it's noisy and kind of sucks because it's big and it's not supposed to not suck in that way. Like YouTube is a content delivery mechanism, not as much a community. But it's like a funny joke to like communities where, and Metafilter's a joke to other communities too. Like, oh, that site where all the assholes are. And I'm like, yes, I'm the den mother. But seriously, I think everything like sets its own level. And YouTube and MySpace and like larger sites that are run by sort of big media corporations who are very hands off wind up with nothing. Like you get lowest common denominator stuff. And I think anything you try to get above that is people paying attention, whether it's sort of paid moderators plus community, a giant community and not as many top down things. And you set your level of, I mean, I don't think YouTube cares about YouTube comments. You think so?
Yeah.
I know. And it distresses them?
Yeah.
They should call me. They need to hire some people then. I mean, at some level to handle it. I mean, part of the whole thing is having humans being in between, you know,
and having those humans modeling comments too. Like that's what you guys are talking about, is like having someone modeling a tone that is the tone that you wish to have on the site. So
I run a social networking community based for recovering alcoholics and addicts, a community that's very judgmental. I don't want to say all of them are judgmental, but some of them are. and I'm constantly dealing with this infighting between members, and some of them get quite nasty and do things where I have to kick them off the board. My question to you is, when you have people, as moderators, when you remove people from the community, what steps do you take to make sure that you're maintaining some kind of consistency so that as you remove people, you're removing them for the same things as you always have? Because I find myself always kind of up against the wall where there's people that I want to remove because I don't know them. They're not really contributors to the community. And there's other people who are vast contributors to the community, just snap for a second, and then they're cool again. That's my question to you.
My personal policy on this, and everyone may not agree with you, this is your community and it's your responsibility to make sure that the good of all is, you know, that everyone benefits, right? So if you have one person, like my advice would be, do not angst too much about whether or not you're going to hurt this one person's feelings if this person is affecting many people. Honestly, we try to stay consistent, but like if I see a common thread with someone has said something which has disrupted the thread and upset other people, you know, at first I would sit back and be like, well, I mean, am I being fair? No, now it's like, banhammer, you're done. And this is part of our like terms of service when you sign up as a commenter. It's like, we can revoke your account at any time for any reason, you know, with no appeal. And, you know, that sounds really Nazi and people really don't like it, but that's our, you know, policy. But, you know, it's insurance. And, you know, I take people out when they're disrupting things. I also leave a lot of things in that I feel like, you know, or maybe, you know, people can, you know, are critical. I certainly leave that kind of stuff in. I mean, you know, at this point, we all have pretty thick skins, right? But it's always about the good of all over the few, you know, the many over the few. And this is up to you. And it's these decisions, you make them, don't feel bad about them. You know, this is, you know, if you're doing the right thing for everyone, you're good.
Right. No, I never feel bad about them.
Okay, good.
but the thing that I'm really concerned with is, from time to time, I have people that I'll remove from the community because they do something. And then somebody else may do the same thing a while later and I'll miss it. Or I won't think, I may be in a different mood or a different.
It happens. Happens. You're human.
I won't remove them. And then other people will come back, friends of the person that got removed or whatever, and will say, hey, They did the same thing. What the hell are you doing?
So from I spent about a year and a half moderating the Second Life forums as part of my job as a community manager. I can give you tactical things to do for that. We had a system of guidelines that everyone agreed to when they joined the forums. We had points assigned to bad behavior. If you did it once, you got warned. If you did it again, you got a stricter warning. Don't do it again. If you do it again, you get suspended for 3 days. You do it again, you get suspended for 7 days. You do it again, you're out for 14 days. You do it again, you're gone forever.
We have the same gradated steps of you get a day off, you get a week off, you're banned indefinitely. We also have a brand new day policy that almost anybody can come back.
Right, and there's a system of appeals. And you make all of this very clear from the beginning when people first join. They agree to this. So there are tactical things you can do that doesn't rely so much on I'm having a really bad day and I hate this guy. And if he says one more bad thing, I swear to God, I'm throwing him out the window, because you don't want that to be the tone of your community. I'm guessing. I didn't want that to be the tone of my community when I was moderating the forums.
Right. No, and having a buddy who's a sounding board to be like, this guy's driving me crazy. What do you think?
Sure.
Yeah. What do you think I should do about this? You know, does this help me, you know, make the community better? So if you come up later, I'll give you my card and I give you some more tactical things if you want.
We have time for one more question.
And I just thought about something. If anybody sees me drinking later on, I'm not in recovery. So,
buy this guy a drink.
Judgmental community. It's okay.
All right. Last question.
I work on a website for kids, so we have some special safety issues with community.
Can you step forward,
Sorry.
Question?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
So we have some special issues around community moderation and safety. One thing that we can't do is individually message the kids if they do something wrong. We can ban them, but we can't really explain to the community that this person has done something wrong unless we broadcast it out to everybody. So I was wondering, not so much for revolt, but for bad behavior, do you ever worry or have you seen instances where bringing attention to bad behavior has actually encouraged other users or given them ideas to sort of emulate that?
We call that the king of the shit pile behavior.
Several of the Gawker sites, we don't do it, but several of the Gawker sites do regular execution posts where they do a post specifically pointing out the users who they've banned and the reasons why. The idea being that, I don't know, it would keep people kind of, you know, mindful of the fact that they will get banned if they misbehave. I that's not really my style. I was never really comfortable with that, so I didn't do that. We also just don't ban that much on Lifehacker because we don't have that problem. I'm not sure. Do you know? Have you heard about how effective that's been? It's always come off as very sort of hostile and aggressive to me. But
yeah,
it's one way to be a reminder of our, you know, comments policy. I don't. That doesn't really sound
like
the right approach.
A
to
sword
you.
Above your population.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I mean, yeah,
but for the grace
is.
Of God, go all the rest of y'all.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of sites do that for entertainment value, not so much.
Well,
for
and there's that, of course.
I don't think it would work for kids, too, because you're concerned about privacy issues and you don't want to necessarily out them for whatever they've done. So,
right. Maybe not in that style, but maybe just kind of regular reminders that don't maybe point out anybody specifically.
Or newslettery updates, like just a reminder, you know, something is a no-no on the Penguin Palace or whatever the heck it is.
And also the point system that Jessica was talking about would work so great with kids.
The points works really well because people understand it. And also the thing we did as to make, because we're all about transparency, is we would have a anonymous police blotter.
Police blotter.
Every time an email was sent that was a suspension or a banishment, it would say someone was suspended in this. It had the same thing in World, if in this region for this crime per se, violation of terms of service or whatever you.
So you see that actually it really does help to regulate the community and set a tone as opposed to like
The reason why we did it is because people would from the community would come back and say, people say bad things all the time and nothing ever happens to them. This was sort of a way to say, okay, we're doing things. Trust me, I wake up at 3 a.m. sometimes and have to do these things. And it was just a way of making it more transparent. I always think transparency is better. So,
and sets expectations, too, so that people kind of know. And then it sort of addresses the issue you were having where, but so-and-so did this. And, I mean, we always say that context matters, but we're also always answerable to whatever happened so that people can ask questions. So part of it is just being responsive. Transparency number one, but also responsive so that you can explain what happened or that something happened if you can't talk specifically about it. And once again, like be on message in this really weird way. And people sort of either get to know it or they don't fit in, which is hard, I think, but is something that I think we all sort of regularly have to deal with.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming out and
enjoy your revolts.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.